Hello and welcome back to Pop Break TV's Saturday Morning Adventures, where contributors to thepopbreak.com and their friends kick back, tune in, and zone out to the kids' cartoons that define their childhoods and the ones that still give them life to this day. My name is Alex Marcus, podcasting director of thepopbreak.com, and today we are here to discuss the colossal fifth episode of X-Men 97 entitled Remember It. And I, for one, will be remembering this for quite a long time, and I think I could say the same for my co-host for this mini-series.
You're speaking on my behalf? We're not even well, like 5 minutes in.
We'll find out, because that is, of course, Kay Anderson, host of Lost Faces podcast. Kay, did this blow you away as much as poor Madeline Pryor got blown away at the end of this episode?
As much as Madeline Pryor, or as much as, well, I guess anyone on the island?
Truly, lots of people got blown away.
Yes, I have thoughts. I have thoughts. I have feelings. I have been touched.
That's beautiful. I have been touched as well. Not as intimately as Magneto touched Rogue, unfortunately. I'm still waiting for that in my life, man. The heat on these love triangles. Now, we're gonna get into all of this. This is a huge episode. So much stuff is happening.
So much.
The first half of the episode is entirely built around these incredible love triangles on top of love triangles. Everything is coming to a head. The drama is at 11. And then at the moment when you're like so invested in this story, friggin' giant robots come and kill everybody. Like you told me they would last episode.
Oh, did I?
Yes, last week we talked a little bit, we speculated about what the Genosha stuff is that they're building towards, and you said that you hope that it isn't what happens in the comics, because in the comics everybody dies, and I said, well, they just moved Artie and Leech there, so Disney's not going to kill them, so I think that they're safe. And sure enough, we watched poor Artie die on screen, clutching Magneto, of all people. I am shook. I don't know, where do you want to start with this? Do you want to start with the love triangle business, or do you, in the psychic cheating and the electromagnetic touch, or do you want to start with the action? Where should we go?
Ooh, let's start at the beginning. Let's like treat this like a kind of podcast where they actually stick to the plot.
I like that. We're gonna pull a Hillary Duff and we're gonna go back to the beginning.
Okay. And this feels a bit tamer as well. Like if we start at the end, there's just too many emotions to flood out.
It's true. At the beginning, we start out in such a normal, typical way where Trish Tilby is interviewing the X-Men to be like, hey, mutants, they're just like you, right? And that gives us an opportunity to kind of check in on where our characters are at, and they are a mess. Beast is flirting. He gives that great line of like, even blue can turn red, and it's like, okay, Beast. And that's sweet, and that's maybe the only sweet thing that happens in this whole episode, because all these adults have a lot of emotions and they just can't handle it. I want to know, which of these groupings of adults did you find most compelling in the first half of this episode? Was it Wolverine and Jean and Scott and Madeline, Gambit and Rogue and Magneto? Morph totally left out?
Morph was standing behind the couch in one scene, but other than that, Morph didn't say anything, Morph didn't do anything. So I just want to give a shout out to Morph. Bishop got like half, oh no, Bishop was in the flashback from the last episode, or was Bishop?
Bishop was
episode?
Just in the previously on yeah. section.
I saw Bishop, I remember seeing Bishop talking and being like, oh, is Bishop getting some action? And then, yeah. Okay.
They're still only giving him those few lines of dialogue. They're just bringing them into other episodes. And that's nice, I guess.
Oh, it's so disappointing. It's so disappointing. Okay. So who am I most enamored by as a pairing? I'm going to say Jean and Logan.
Interesting. Tell us why.
First, the bad thing about this, I think they haven't done enough to set up Logan's feelings about Jean. And maybe that's because this is a follow-on to the previous series, and so everyone's expected to know already that he harbors these feelings. But throughout the show, there's not really been enough detail about why he loves her. Like, there's not been enough kind of interactions between them.
Spoken as someone who famously doesn't like Jean Grey, doesn't see what the fuss is.
Maybe I would be warmer towards her if I saw what Logan sees in her. And I think that they need to let the viewer in on that world a bit. But I think it's a really interesting dynamic. I think Jean's a total hypocrite as well, but we'll get onto that.
Oh my God. In the best of ways. In the best of ways. I loved it so much because it felt so human. It was like Jean Grey oftentimes is stuck in this like insane continuity of comic book nonsense, and you could kind of lose the humanity of it. But truly making out with your male friend who you know is harboring a crush on you because you are having a low moment in terms of your self-confidence, and then immediately finding out that your boyfriend is cheating on you psychically and yelling at him as if you did nothing wrong is just relatable thing I think Jean has maybe ever done.
But I mean, on top of that, like, wouldn't you give him some leeway since he was married and had a child with that person because he thought that that person was you? Like, wouldn't you just be like, well, yeah, I'll allow it.
So if we're talking from like a purely rational place, yes. Uh-huh. But the fact that he had a child with this woman who is a clone of hers reinforces the idea that he did not know that she was a clone. And that is deeply hurtful to Jean, even if rationally there's no reason why Scott would know that she was a clone.
I see.
Because, okay, of course, she's identical. She has her personality. She has her memory. She looks exactly like her. How would he know? But Jean wants to believe that their connection was so strong that he would be able to know that it wasn't her. It was an imposter.
Oh,
and so the fact that they have this connection, a connection that he shares with Madeline that he doesn't share with Jean because he didn't know it wasn't Jean, hurts so deeply that she can totally go off on him even though she just made out with Logan in the backyard.
Yeah. I kind of get what you're saying, but also I think Jean, as a fully realized human being, I just think she needs therapy, really.
Well, who on this cast doesn't need therapy?
Yeah. They need to, like, convert the danger room into a therapy room, I think.
They could actually just continue to call it the danger room because that would be very intense.
Oh, yeah, but they need, like, some nice couches. They could still call it the danger room, but, you know, shush it up a bit.
I love that, yeah. And I mean, like, listen, Scott Summers can't talk about his life for more than 5 minutes without completely melting down on live television, so...
Oh, before we get into that, though, I want to stay on this psychic affair that's happening, because it's really interesting that in the comic books, that affair was with Emma Frost, who was the White Queen, who was also in this episode, but, like, in a really, like, boring way. Like, you don't get any insight into her character. She's this delicious character.
She does... throw shade and slays, and that's great for, you know,
but not enough. It's not like a withering put down. It's just like a generic one.
And also, when she's hanging on Sebastian Shaw's arm doing it, it's like, come on, how hard am I supposed to feel about this? Look at your own choices.
But yeah, I mean, again, I'm going to talk about the build-up. The build-up in the comic book was so much better for when Jean found out about the affair, because it had been going on for so long. And so some of the impact of this is taken away. I mean, not least because she should have a little bit of understanding about Cyclops' situation, but because also it hasn't been like this prolonged love affair that's been going on for ages. As I know, actually, because I was going to say, what the fuck is the time difference between episodes?
So he specifically says it's been going on for a month. Now, we don't know when it started. The implication is that there had been some time between when Madeline leaves and when this started, but then it's been going on consistently for the last month. So how much time? I would say probably a couple of months, maybe 3 or 4 months at most, have passed. And I feel like the reason why this hurts, it isn't something that's been going on for very long, but what it indicates to Jean is that actually nothing has changed between Scott and Madeline, right? Like, they had a whole relationship. They got married. They had a kid. She thought that relationship was severed when she came back. But really, this is suggesting it hasn't been severed. It's been continuing. So the affair isn't a long time, but the relationship as a whole is long and, as we know now, basically uninterrupted. And that's why it feels like such a betrayal, because it also pushes on that button of, you should have never been with her in the first place because you should have known. So now, not only did you not know, but now you're continuing to do this even now that you do know. So then how do you really feel about me? And again, it's like very Leo energy. It's very self-centered of Jean. She's not really being emotionally considerate of the completely insane situation that Scott Summers has found himself in Yeah. But I get it. I get it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, you're shedding a different light on it to me. I'm just like, Jean, for fuck's sake, go sort your own shit out, then come back and get mad at him. Like, you've not had enough time to heal. Focus on yourself.
What did you think about the way that she talks about it, in the sense of that she had this opportunity to just like fly off into the cosmos as Phoenix, but use Scott as this tether to reality, because she loves him so much that her love grounded her to him, and yet there is not that her fear is that that's not reciprocal, because when he had the opportunity, he couldn't stay connected to her even for a second.
I mean, I think that's a fairly toxic thing to say to someone. Like, you you made that choice. Like, you have to own that choice. Yeah, so what? You're not like queen of the universe. You decided that. It's not his fault.
It honestly, it brought me, and this is like testament to good writing. It really made me think of, I don't know if you've seen Noah Baumbach's Marriage Story.
No.
Okay, so in that, it's basically, despite the fact that it's Marriage Story, it's a story about a divorce, and Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson are going through a divorce. And at one point, like, they're trying to be polite in all these different ways throughout the whole film. Then it really builds to this big kind of blow up argument that they have, where they finally say all the things that they've been holding back for their entire relationship. And a big thing that Adam Driver says, he's like a theater director in New York, and he like just screams that like he could have been hot shit and slept with any actress in the city if he wanted, but he spent his prime with her and she doesn't respect that. And it just really, and it's so toxic and so ridiculous, but also like, it just, I really thought of that moment when Jean was like, I could have been the Phoenix flying through the cosmos, eating planets, I guess. Like, Phoenix was not good. It wasn't a good thing she was taken over by the Phoenix. So, but it's, it really brought me back to that moment.
Yeah. And I mean, like, don't get me wrong, I totally appreciate where she's coming from when she said that. I totally appreciate like the anger that was present at that time. But still, you got to know when to say things and when to keep them to yourself. And she should have just kept that to herself.
Absolutely. At least wait for the TV cameras to leave.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. See, this is why I don't like Jean. I don't know why he's always defending her.
She's so much
like, I'm better than you. I'm so like good. I'm so, yeah. And then she's just a bitch.
Yeah. She just reminds me of too many friends that I've had in real life where I'm like, I understand where you're coming from, but okay, now that you're calm, let's think about it from another perspective, you know?
Now that you had a snack.
And listen, I don't know how, I would like to say that I would be better if I came back from the dead and found my clone living with my boyfriend, but I don't know if I would be. I'll be honest. I don't know how I would respond to that.
No, I probably wouldn't, but I would also probably want to sexually experiment with my clone.
So the Logan piece of it, let's just stay there for a second, because why do you think Jean did that in that moment? Why do you think she kisses him?
Because he was there. I don't know. I don't know if it's very deep. Like, she was feeling vulnerable. There's always some chemistry between them. Like, it's not that there isn't chemistry. And it just felt natural.
Interesting. My read on it was that she's having this crisis, right? She really is lost in her memories and her, what she's supposed to be, who she is, who she's meant to be, with all of this stuff. And she's able to have this really honest, vulnerable conversation with him. And the subtext of it all is, you don't have to be anything to me. I still love you. And there's so much pressure that she's feeling around being Jean Grey that she wasn't even Jean Grey enough to keep Scott from knowing that she was Jean Grey and not an imposter, right? And so she's stuck in this idea of like who she is, who she has to be, all this pressure, all these expectations, all this history. Meanwhile, this guy is just standing right next to her being like, you're an amazing person and you're incredible and you don't have to be anything else but who you are right now. And then I think what's so interesting about that is that she kisses him and he says, listen, this isn't the right thing to do. Like, you're Jean Grey, he's Scott Summers. Those are the rules. You just forgot them for a second, but that's okay. And it's like, no, man, she's kissing you because she wants to break those rules, right? She's attracted to the fact that you're not putting those expectations on her. So then for you to retreat into those expectations, at this, it's like, it's such like a weirdly cruel thing to do, I think, from Logan's perspective. It's like cruel for him towards himself. It's like, I feel like he's saying it in a sort of self-deprecating way. It's like, no, you have to be with Scott. That's who you're supposed to be with. You can't be with someone like me. But it also unintentionally is kind of cruel to her, because she's like, I just need to be in this moment with you right now. Don't put those expectations on me. That's why I'm in this moment with you right now, you know?
Ooh, I don't know how I feel about what you've just said. No, it's a self-protectionism from Logan. I don't think it's cruel towards Jean to be like, actually, maybe don't dick around with my feelings because you've just come back from finding out you're a clone and someone's kid.
I don't think it's intentionally cruel.
Virus. Oh, okay.
I don't think it's intentionally cruel at all. I think it because he's thinking he's saying something that's going to help ground her and that he can't imagine that this moment that they're having is good for her.
Could be anything else. Yeah.
Yes. And it's definitely coming from self-protection and also I think some self-loathing of just like not really, this can't be real. This has to be like a mistake that you're making and I'm not going to let you make it because I love you, right? But there's an insidious part of that by him using that kind of language of like, you're Jean Grey. And the whole thing that she's connecting with him on is, I don't know who I am or what I am or what this is. Like he's trying to give her that. But what she needs, in my opinion, in that moment is to not be buried under the weight of those expectations, to just be in that moment with him.
But what are the expectations associated with Jean Grey?
I guess that she could just like come back into her old life and just pick up where she left off, even though an imposter has been living as her for all of these years and every connection that she had was kind of, you know, from her perspective, stolen by this woman, you know?
But so it's not the expectation to act a certain way, it's the expectation to slot into a life that you haven't been living.
Correct.
Okay.
It's a life that she wasn't living and that lived on without her for a while too. Mm-hmm. So like she's lost both the opportunity to have the experiences that Maddie has had. And now she is catching up to it and is like, I don't even know if I'm this person, right? Because Maddie was able to live in that world and evolve and grow as Jean Grey. And now suddenly old Jean Grey is back and she's like, I don't even know if that's who I am anymore. You know, you've grown in a different direction than me. Maybe. I don't know. I was robbed that opportunity to grow from those experiences. Yeah. I can't know what it's like to be a mother, to have this bond with Scott that you have because you had that choice to do that and was able to grow from that. And I'm stuck in a cave with Sinister or whatever the fuck was happening.
Yeah. And that kind of makes me more and less sympathetic to the way she responded to Scott earlier on. Because if she's saying, should I be living this life, why is she then placing the expectation that he should be?
Because if he loves her so much, she wants him to be the one to say, no, I love you. You're with me. This is who we are. We're going to work, figure this out together. She doesn't want him to also be having an identity crisis.
Oh, okay. So she can have an identity crisis, but at the moment that he starts questioning things, that's it. Kaput.
Yes.
Okay. That seems all right. Oh, yeah, okay.
Right,
yeah,
isn't that? That's a reciprocal relationship, right? Yeah, you help someone with their crisis and then they appreciate that you helped them, right?
Yeah. You fall apart, they keep you together. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
There's nothing wrong with that. That's totally nothing toxic at all.
Healthy relationships all absolutely around in the MC. MC. Yeah. Oh, this isn't the MCU. This is
no,
the
MC... although we'll put a pin in that.
MCAU? Okay, all right, yeah.
MXCU?
MX? What's the X? Oh, I see.
X.
Oh, yeah. MCXCU. Yeah, that works.
Sure, let's go with that.
Okay.
Print some posters with that on. Okay, so there's a lot going on. And in the middle of that, Scott is having a psychic affair. Now, you're saying that this is an inspiration from a comic book storyline that I don't know. So please tell us more about that.
Well, it's just essentially that. In the comic book, the role that's played by Madeline within this affair is played by Emma Frost. And Cyclops and Emma Frost have this affair for ages. Then Jean Grey and Cyclops break up. And Cyclops is with Emma Frost for a number of years throughout the comic before, I think maybe Jean dies again or something. I don't know. You know what she's like.
It's true.
Always buggering off to the afterlife and then like, oh, I might come back now.
It's almost like she was raised by Charles Xavier or something. But yeah, okay, so that's interesting. It's interesting that there's precedent for that idea, but that they've used it in this totally different way. I really like using Madeline Pryor like this. I think it's pretty cool because basically, if my memory is right, in the comics, like Scott just like leaves her in Alaska with their kid for a long time. And she's just like, I don't know if he's ever coming back. And then he falls in love with Jean again and she's just still in Alaska. And then like for a while, isn't she a supporting character in the X-Men comic book? And while Scott and Jean are in X-Factor?
Oh God, my memory's hazy on that. Sorry.
I believe that that's true for a little while. And then that's how the whole Goblin Queen thing happens and she becomes a big bad. And then she like dies and it's, you know, it's an iconic story. But I like the soap opera potential that they're playing with here, where leaving her on the board and not as a like villain who's making deals with goblins and stuff. You really get to play that idea of like, well, who should Scott even be with? Like, is he wrong to want this connection with Madeline to continue? Like when he says, I love both of you, you kind of feel that anguish that he has. Like it's an impossible mm-hmm. situation. He's fallen in love with, from his perspective, one person, and suddenly it's two. We joked about this earlier in our coverage and we said like, oh, two is better than one, but I think this is showing that no, actually probably not.
It depends how needy you are, really. Like I don't think I could handle it, because if they were like, let's have a date night, and then you just have to like spend lots
all three
of
these people
them.
I think are pretty needy in different ways.
So then I think it could work for them. I think they could at least try it before saying no. I am not opposed to them using Madeline in this way. I think the thing that I don't like about the development of the Madeline character is that she's been aware of who she is for like, what, 1 month, 2 months? And she's already got her shit together better than I have.
That's fair. And not only is she already figured out this situation pretty well, she was the clone of someone who didn't have their shit figured out in the first place. So
yeah, I mean, this doesn't, odds were not in her favor. How did she do this?
I guess, though, she did briefly turn into a supervillain, and so there is that. So maybe she just got it all out of her system really quickly, and then once she came to her senses,
so that's what
she
I should
gone
try
through that. I agree. I'm all for it. I'm gonna actually, you know, look up your size so I can send a black cape in the mail for you. So you just like spend a weekend. It seemed like all of that happened in 24 hours, and it seemed to do her like a lot of good. So just lean into it for a weekend.
Yeah. Okay. I could do that. Yeah. This weekend.
Be fun. Okay. Good. I'm on board with this plan. But yeah, I think it's interesting. I obviously pitched a whole idea of like, we're not going to see her until next season and she's going to be in Alaska. I was totally wrong, I'm happy to admit, because what happens here was such a big, interesting surprise for me. Were you expecting to see her in Genosha? You thought that her and Cable would pop up together, and you were right about that. So I'm going to give you kudos there, because they absolutely did pop up, but maybe not in the way that you anticipated.
No. Oh, yeah. God, I don't remember any of the things I've said before. Sorry. But like, go me. I'm like predicting all these things. I have to say, I was really disappointed that she was on the Genosian Council. I was just like, what the fuck? Like, how the fuck did this happen? She changed her name. She went off the radar so she can go and figure herself out. How did the people of Genosha even find her?
The one thing that I did like about that is where they were like, well, we needed to have an X-Men on the council. And so we asked for a fake one. Basically, it's like, way to exploit your loopholes, Genosha Council.
Yeah. I mean, surely Jubilee would have been a better choice, right? Or like Bishop. They're not doing anything with Bishop.
Well, Bishop is in the future right now, so he can't help out. But yeah, I mean, there's no shortage of former X-Men that actually could have filled that role. Yeah. You know, like, what about Angel? He's just like running around screaming about Apocalypse still, probably.
Well, he was on the island. Maybe he's just like, do you know what? I'm just going to have a life of leisure.
Yeah. He's not really, let's be real, he's not leadership material, Angel. No, he's too emotionally impulsive. Not like Madeline Pryor, who's got a real calm head on her shoulders.
Yeah. Feet on the ground, that one.
Let's move on over to Genosha, and we can talk about the council, which made a lot of moves, including helping Magneto close his game with Rogue. Just kind of landed that plane, or did he? It seems like there was some ambiguity there. What do you make of all of this stuff? This is pulling from comics continuity that I don't know. I haven't seen these Genosha arcs before, so I'm kind of with the normies on this one.
Yeah, so this isn't like from the comic books. What they've done is they've taken the Quiet Council from the Krakoan era and mapped it on to have this kind of the Genosian Council thing.
And so that was like the sort of like the party at the end, the gala, as they say. The That's kind of like the Hellfire gala, has been a thing in the comics for the last few years during the Krakoa era.
Yeah. So they've taken lots of elements of Krakoa and applied it to Genosha. Completely different islands.
Isn't there another era where Genosha becomes like this, like a similar sort of like island independent movement for X-Men before they get attacked and destroyed?
So Genosha is from the comic book. It does go through the process of joining the UN and becoming an officially recognized country. I don't think the X-Men ever lived there, though.
Okay, but other mutants do until it all falls apart.
Yeah, and you think they would learn something from that.
I suppose, but what's more, you know, the prospect of finding a place where you could be safe to be yourself. I mean, the way that it's rendered here is truly emotional. It's really, I don't know, I don't know if you had a similar experience, but I found it deeply moving to see, like, especially get so much of like the kids running around using their mutant powers, not feeling judged, not being afraid. Especially we're spending a lot of time with the Morlocks, who were forced to live underground, although you did remind us that maybe it wasn't forced. Maybe they made that choice consciously and we should respect it. But they certainly seemed happier here until, of course, they weren't. I found it all very moving. It really felt like a utopia for these people.
Except for when you want to buy an apple.
True. Well, listen, it takes a lot. It costs a lot to import goods to
it. It does.
To an island nation.
You would think an island like that would have good agriculture. I mean, I'm just assuming because of the sunshine.
I would think an island like that would have at least one mutant who was really good at generating food out of thin air. So food would be free.
Oh, yeah. Fruit boy. Yeah.
Yeah. Come on. Although it would probably like come out of his body and then maybe we don't want to eat it.
After a while, you'd get used to that, I think.
I suppose. Free food's free food, right?
You know? Yeah. Yeah.
I bet it would taste delicious.
I'm open-minded, but yeah, I don't know. Anyway, what I want to talk about for the Genosian Council is the cast of characters. Actually, I don't really care about any of them other than Banshee and Moira McTaggart, who happen to be the very worst voice actors ever in the entire history of the world.
It's very true. I don't understand. Have either of these people ever stepped foot in Scotland? I would love to know.
Well, firstly, Banshee is Irish.
Sure. Oh, apologies. I don't know how I missed that from the incredible accent work done.
Yeah, it's just, it's just terrible. I actually think that the Moira that was in the original series wasn't too bad. I mean, maybe I'm misremembering. But she sounded like, you could be like, oh, that is Scottish, even if it is a bit on the nose.
I don't know. I feel like it was pretty bad. And I feel like this actress is kind of trying to do an homage to that instead of just doing a regular Scottish accent.
But there is no way that anyone who does not know who Moira McTaggart is would watch that and be like, yep, that is a Scottish accent. Like, at least sometimes you're like, that's so bad and so like hammy and over the top, but at least I know what they were going for. This one was just a total fail.
And again, like, we've kind of been critical of some of the voice performances only to learn that they were actually the original voice artists. And but this, we have to stress, is not that situation. The actress, Martha Marion, who, you know, all due respect, voice acting is hard and it's quickly becoming eliminated by robots. So that sucks.
Yeah. Sorry,
Martha.
Get
your paycheck where you can.
Yeah. You took a job. You did your best, but like,
it's not your fault that they hired you to do that. Like, someone else made the choice, you know, you're just trying to get paid and I respect it, but yeah, I don't know. I'm American. I don't have expertise on these accents like you do, my friend.
No, but you've got ears.
Exactly. It's so bad. It's so bad. And are you surprised that Moira was there? It felt like this is kind of like a Krakoa Easter egg, right? Like, they make a point to say she's human, but like in the Krakoa era, we find out, of course, she isn't.
Yeah, and I wonder if they're leading up to that, especially that because of the Cable thing. Oh, this could get really confusing.
It could, for sure. Well, and especially that, like, everyone is dead by the end of this episode. I know I had someone say to me, like, oh, well, this was pretty intense, but I'm sure they're just going to use time travel to undo it all. I'm like, I don't know if they are, but if they pull the Moira McTaggart card, then maybe they could.
They could just start the whole universe again.
Yeah. Do you think that they would really go down that road?
I think it's that's
a lot.
I mean, that is quite convoluted.
Yeah.
I think they'd be better to make use of Cable in this instance and get, because, you know, the whole thing was that he time slid there in order to stop the explosion. So why would he not then try that again, but be successful next time?
Yeah. Well, there's always those rules in different time travel universes where it's like, once you return to a point in time, you can't return to it again.
Yeah. So he'll just go like a week earlier and be like, hey, everyone. Yeah, he'll just like time slide back an extra week or two and then be like, you know, thrown in jail because you're spreading vicious gossip about the end of the world.
Yeah. I mean, they certainly did not put Cable there just so he could have that one moment with Madeline, which was very touching and emotional and confusing.
Well, I have a question for you, though. If you had a baby that you had to give up and send into the future, do you think that if you ran into the adult version of that baby about 2 weeks later, you would know just by looking in their eyes that they were actually that child?
I'm going to say yes, because I'm a good parent who would love my child, and obviously I would be able to know. Come on, okay.
What if you fancied him?
That well, would be then I would be in Back to the Future.
Yeah. What if we've all had a Back to the Future situation and just didn't know?
I would probably prefer to continue not knowing.
Yeah.
I think that's
but
the
it
only
might
way
be more common than you think.
It's true. I mean, listen, if time travel is happening, then it means that it's happening in secret. So it could be fucking up our lives constantly. We wouldn't know.
Yeah. I see what you did there. Fucking up our lives.
Speaking of, let's talk about Rogue and Magneto and Gambit. Heartbreaking. I want you to talk first on this.
Oh, heartbreaking. Well, I was going to go to Magneto being a snippy bitch in the Blackbird at the beginning of the episode when he was like, do you know, if there was an accident right now, you'd be fucked, Gambit, but we can both fly, so we're fine.
That was so unnecessary and so hilarious.
Yeah. It's funny as well that Gambit was like, I'm going to tag along on your visit. Like, that must have been a very tense plane ride. And Rogue seemed kind of oblivious to it.
What is going on with her in the first, like, few scenes of this episode? It feels like we're stuck in Gambit's perspective, so we're not really getting the insight. Mm. And then finally we get it once we hear the scenes that she has with Magneto. But I feel like one scene with her talking to one person who's not one of these two men would probably have helped kind of flesh out the dynamics a little bit more, right?
Yeah, like, maybe.
Who's a friend that she could have on the team that she could have confided in before getting on the plane, for instance? Be like, this is going to be awkward because there's all this tension. Like, just what, like, quick combo with somebody. Who would she talk to?
Yeah, I mean,
not Beast.
The person that
Storm's
seems
gone.
Most obvious is Storm, but Storm's not there.
And Jean, she is certainly going to be no help. She is in her own mess right now.
Yeah. And Jubilee?
There's a way that you could do the sort of like older sister, younger sister kind of thing in that scene. But it wouldn't have really felt like she's going to a friend, you know?
And Morph is too much of a gossip.
Truly. Yeah,
I would have given Morph an opportunity to do something, though, this episode that could have been
The scene that I wish we had was after the kiss, Logan comes to Morph, tells Morph everything, and then Morph tries to kind of console him while getting a little bit, you know,
by turning into Jean and making out.
Exactly. Like, I can give you, I mean, it's basically every, you know, closeted queer person's straight crush fantasy, right? Like, I'll just be the person that you love. It's fine. I don't care about myself.
And it would play into the toxicity of X characters.
Truly, yeah. I wouldn't have wanted that from Worf because that's so not good, but it would have felt natural in that moment.
So I don't know who Rogue could have talked to, because I don't think Rogue is particularly close to anyone that would have been in the mansion at that time. But again, like, when they were on Genosha and they were like watching the dancing and stuff, which was kind of boring if you ask me, but anyway, if they were when they were watching
like
the
crying, I was like, this is so beautiful.
When they were watching the performance.
Yeah, like, when Dazzler was there. Because it was just like, they have a place. They finally have a place where they could belong. Come on. I'm such a softy with that kind of stuff.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, anyway. Well, when they were there, she seemed like really like carefree, and that they were, you know, there together, and that there wasn't really anything playing on her mind, which we then found out wasn't the case, because there was something playing on her mind when she went to the Hellfire Gala.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. Like, there was no rogue perspective in that. And maybe she was so caught up in the moment and full of joy that those troubles slipped away. Or maybe she was just written inconsistently.
Well, I think we stumbled on the answer, which is there's not another character for her to talk to about her feelings in this moment, unfortunately. So we
but
just
she could have still seemed conflicted. Like, I you guess. Could make her seem like a bit like withdrawn.
I feel like what they were going for was she's just like, she's overcome by the moment in a positive sense. And so she's just like, I'm not going to let all of this like relationship bullshit get in the way. I'm going to go to the club and I'm going to dance. And that's also, I think, a relatable thing. We've all been there, right? We're just like, I'm just going to leave my problems aside and just like be in the moment and listen to Dazzler and just have like one solid, uncomplicated moment before all of the crazy romantic drama hits me.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. But in terms of this crazy romantic drama.
Yes.
I think it kind of resolved quite quickly.
It does. They have to rush it a bit because, you know, they have to get to the explosions.
She was just like, oh, UVA, you've taken me to this gala and it's really fancy and it's nice, but nah, not you, Magneto, not you.
So what I like about it, we've talked a lot about on this show, the storytelling problem of just like rushing through plot because we're trying to fit so much into each individual episode. And what I like about this, we arguably get like a lot less of this stuff because we have all the Jean and Scott and Logan and Maddie stuff happening at the same time. But I do think that they tell it pretty efficiently. We get the scene where Gambit talks to Nightcrawler, where Gambit isn't just a pouty kind of guy who's like, oh man, my girlfriend, she'd like somebody else, you know, like, and it gives him a chance to feel more complicated and more like, yeah, you know what? Maybe I'm just making this up in my head. Maybe if I just assert myself, then this is going to work out. You know, maybe that's all that matters. And I liked that beat that they played. And I liked that it was Kurt who did it because he's so kind of like, you know, he's very swashbuckly in his way. So he wouldn't have let this anxiety stop him from dating his step half adopted sister, right? That's what his deal is in the comics. It's a whole Amanda Sutton thing. But the less said about that, the better. But yeah, so I liked that moment. And then I like that it comes to, you get that scene. I thought the scene between Gambit and Rogue, where Rogue basically says, like, I'm choosing Magneto because he can give me something that you can't. I found that really beautiful because you could tell how much he loves her, that he's willing to say, I'm going to support you in this choice, even though it's devastating for me to do it. And I just want you in my life. So I'll be your friend. And I know this is a mistake for you, but that's okay because I'm here. And if this is all we can be, that's fine. I'm going to keep loving you, but I'll be whatever you need me to be. And if things don't work out, I'm still here. And because that's what matters to me most. And I thought that was very emotionally mature and both for Gambit and for the fact we're watching a kids cartoon. But I don't know, you have a look on your face like you disagree.
Well, do you think that maybe in the back of his mind he was like, maybe I can meet someone I can actually have sex with?
No, I don't think he wants that at all. I think he's so just like, he is lost on her. Like, he is just completely done. Yeah. There's nobody else for him.
Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, I guess my perspective on this has changed over time. I think that premise of never being able to touch was quite delicious when I was a child. Like, it's this kind of love that's out of reach, but is like unconditional, right? But now I'm a bit like, oh, this would be boring.
I mean, to be fair, there's other things people could do together within that particular zone. Like, they could have been creative and still had a fun time.
Oh, yeah. Like, got those vibrators that you can manage on an app. Yeah.
Absolutely. Maybe in the 90s it was harder, but.
Yeah.
There were things you could do.
Well, they had pages. No, I'm serious. They could have borrowed Bobby's pager.
Yeah.
Got it, and then, like, messaged each other and it would vibrate. That's how they work.
But the message is boobs, right? yeah. There's a version in the vast multiverse of the Marvel universe. That definitely happened at least once.
Let's get back on topic. I know that you love to get back on topic. Do you think that this love thing is over between Rogue and Magneto?
Well, Magneto's dead, so yes.
I don't think Magneto's dead.
Well, I guess there is precedent for that. But okay, so here's what I think happened that I thought was really cool. Is she makes this choice because she says, here's this thing that I have denied myself basically since the moment that I left Magneto. And she presents her relationship with Magneto as this like sophisticated, interesting older man who really like swept her off her feet, and they had what seemed like incredible sex. And that's like awesome for them. And it felt real. It felt like something that a person like Rogue would have fallen into in her 20s with an older man. And it would have been a really important, meaningful experience in her past. And I think it's so interesting that the show decided to let her try to rekindle that, right? To say like, I miss that. That was something that really meant so much to me. And I would like to have that back, even if it means giving up this person that I love. And then she tries to make that connect, reestablish that connection, and immediately realizes like, I'm not that person anymore. And you're not that person anymore. And part of what I loved so much was a memory that is kind of artificial in the first place, right? It's not, it's where it's nostalgia. It's was the thing that I've been pining for even real 100%, or was it a fabrication of my past experience? And all of that leads to a moment of this actually doesn't feel like it did. And I'd rather be separated from the person that I love together than be able to physically connect with someone who doesn't have the spark anymore, because that spark is gone. We can't get it back. We could, if we come back together, maybe we create something new with that new connection, but it has to be a new connection. I can't get that back. That's gone. That's in the past. Obviously, I'm projecting a little bit. They don't really, all they do is dance and touch hands, and she's like, it's not you. But I feel like that's what they're trying to say. Am I crazy?
Yeah, you're reading into things a lot today, which isn't bad. But
yeah, I feel like they want us to. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. Is she pining after the past?
The way she talks about it when she describes it to Gambit is really informing where I'm coming from. Like, there's so much nostalgia. There's so much like wistfulness about this dalliance that she had in her past with him. And she also talks about the ending of it in such a romantic way of there was just not enough room in our affair for his demons and mine. That's such like a romantic way to be like, yeah, we actually were really dysfunctional, so we had to break up, right? So I feel like she's really romanticized this thing that a lot of people have these in their 20s or in their young adult life. These like cornerstone moments, you know,
when they're 55, so
exactly. And whenever I mean, it's pretty rare that people get the opportunity to recapture that. And I feel like oftentimes when people try to, they realize that it's not possible, because you can't go back to the past. You have to try to do something different with that same person, and now it's a whole different.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I get what you're saying, and I totally appreciate that like that is a thing. People try and recapture these past emotions, and it just doesn't hit the same because of different life factors that have meant that those people have changed. But do you not think that Rogue would have realized this through all the time that she's been spending with Magneto already?
No, because they're doing this thing where they are having these like stolen glances and these like clandestine meetings, which ups the ante and lets you kind of like go on vapors for a while, right? Like, I mean, I've not been in that experience, having like a secret shadowy affair with someone, but
oh, you should try it.
The people who I've known and who I've heard from who have had that oftentimes say, as soon as like you lose the kind of excitement, the danger, the secret, you're just stuck with like the person, and it's like, oh, right. And sometimes it's like, and I loved that person, and so I'm happy. And other times it's like, oh, it was really just the sneaking around that was fun. It wasn't really you at all. So I think that they're able to kind of coast by like sneaking brief conversations in the, you know, in the mansion for a while before. Yeah. And this is the moment where they really are doing the most in public. You know, you're my queen.
But it's just like, you know, wouldn't you want to just try it for a week or something before then deciding?
The X-Men do not do things
wouldn't
slow
you just
want to
bang
in
him first as well? Like, you've not had sex in ages. I know I sound sex like obsessed in today's conversation.
No, well, I mean,
but like, wouldn't you
literally
just, like,
she breaks up with Gambit because she says that she can't touch him. So sex is part of the conversation. Also, props to these writers for being able to tell this story without getting a like TV MA rating. I don't know how they pulled it off. Like, it's
Oh yeah,
it's pretty.
Point.
They really talk around the subject in a way that makes it perfectly clear to adults what you're talking about, and still like safe for kids, quote unquote. You know, it's pretty. It's a pretty delicate balance that they pulled off surprisingly well.
Very much so. Good point.
But yeah, I think that it all makes sense because I think that she was probably expecting to give this a real try, and I think when they have that first kiss, she realizes right away it's just not. And that's all she needed because she loves Gambit so much. And so she's, the contrast is just so clear.
Yeah. Finish your point.
No, I was just going to say, maybe she would have, you know, not broken up with him in that moment. Maybe she would have gone home with him that night and saw like, well, maybe it was because everyone was watching us. Let's have a moment by ourselves, see how that goes. And then broken up with him in the morning. But exactly. She didn't have that chance because the entire ballroom blew up.
Yeah, but she broke up with him before. Like, she didn't know the ballroom was going to blow up. So she thought, oh, I better break up with him first.
She didn't completely break up with him. She says something like, that wasn't what I wanted it to be.
Seemed pretty fine.
But the conversation is literally interrupted. And so maybe he could have talked her into giving it another shot.
Yeah, he is quite.
Maybe he was like, I'm really better at finger stuff. You know, like, who knows? They could have had a conversation.
I promise I'll use my tongue. It's only really just hit me why they chose that Ace of Base song to play when Rogue came in to the Hellfire Gala.
Why? Tell our audience.
Oh, okay. I thought I was being a bit stupid. It's because the song is called Happy Nation.
Yeah.
It's a bit on the nose that they chose that song, but now I realize why they chose that song. Because when it first came on, I was like, what the fuck is happening? Like, why are they playing this Ace of Base song?
It's very on the nose, except for the fact that Ace of Base is, I think at this point, fair to say, a very obscure, like, 90s reference people wouldn't have placed.
And it's... like that song's from like 94, so like no one's listening to that song in 97. Come on.
Well, you know, culture takes a little bit longer to get to Genosha. You know, they don't have the internet.
Maybe. But yeah, like what a weird song choice. Like so weird, especially because they don't use songs in any other episode. It's not like
no. Yeah. But you have to have a song for these, like, this sequence, I think.
Yeah,
so,
but you could just
and
have,
I
like, some generic, like, ooh,
you
this
could,
is what
but I
the
like
Genosian
that it was
culture
a,
is.
It feels so 90s, you know, in a way that doesn't feel like, you know, a Madonna song on the soundtrack or like, a Britney Spears needle drop. Like, so in that way, I felt like it added to the ambiance a bit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, it was, I'm not necessarily complaining. I mean, I know I sound like I am.
It's you sound just, like you're complaining a little it's bit. Just, I, you're, it's it feels just like you're weird. Making me defend Ace of Base, which is a weird place for me to be in.
Oh, no, no, no. I'm not criticizing Ace of Base. Ace of Base, amazing. And that song, amazing. Like, I mean, ridiculous, but amazing. It's just that they've not used music in this way to help tell their story. Until now. So it's weird that in episode 5 they're like, hey, why don't we bring a song from the 90s and put it into this episode? That's all I'm saying.
It's true. I get it. It makes sense. I thought it worked for me, but I understand the concern.
Concern's a bit of a strong word.
But we didn't, I personally didn't have a lot of time to ruminate on the song choice because all of a sudden everything was being blown up.
Yeah, but before it got blown up, I think I want to talk about Madeline Pryor getting kind of shot in the head and then having these little flashes of things.
And then Jean having the same thing happen all the way on the other side of the world.
I'm less concerned about Jean. What do you think happened? Like, what do you think that was?
I have no idea. It seemed like some sort of psychic attack of some kind.
And the
I didn't
flashes
know if they were...
in it were like, there was like a rat or something. I couldn't like quite tell because it was all quite choppy. Is it Mr. Sinister related?
So that's what I thought was happening. I thought it was like, oh no, Sinister, turns out he had like a secret backdoor into both of the Greys, Jean Grey's minds, and now he's going to activate them. And I thought maybe like, you know, Madeline would become Phoenix again and it would be so sad or something. I didn't know what was happening, but I thought we were maybe going down that road. But then Cable shows up, and then I think, like, was Cable trying to psychically warn his mom, and then, like, accidentally also Jean? Or, like, what? Like, is there a connection there?
Oh, see, because Isaac Cable was there to stop the attack.
Yes, but like was part of his plan to stop the attack, trying to psychically connect to Madeline Pryor / Jean Grey.
Oh, I see. Oh, so sorry. I misunderstood what you're saying. And yeah. and so that was what the flash in their brain was that caused them to
maybe
fall down. Okay.
Or is it that they're like part of the Sentinel operation was we need to disarm the most powerful X weapon, which is Jean Grey / Madeline Pryor. So we have like a psychic weapon that we used ahead of the attack. So that way they can't, you know, stop the robots. Is that what was happening?
So they didn't actually attack Jean. They just attacked Madeline. But because of their connection, Jean felt it.
Yeah, because maybe because of the fact that they were just like inside each other's brains while Scott was having an affair. But then that does make it interesting that Scott wasn't the one, didn't get hurt too. But he doesn't have psychic powers. He just gets co-opted into their psychic powers. So I guess that would be okay. He would be insulated enough. But yeah, I don't know. That was, I have lots of questions and I'm sure we're going to, I don't think that just happened. Like, we're going to find out what the deal is there, but probably not for a while, given where we are going to be next week. So it's
but
very
anyway,
curious.
So that happened.
I think
that
the other thing I think it could be is like, maybe it's this, like, maybe it's like a time quake sort of thing where like, she's a super powerful, they're both super powerful telepaths. And so they are more able to like be affected by like a wave through time where, you know, someone is disrupting the time stream. We've seen things like that before in different stories. So maybe that was something that happening. But I think it all is going to.
But that doesn't really explain the flashes then, does it? Like the little cutaways that we saw.
Nothing really explains what those flashes were. I'd like to rewatch the episode to see if I could like pinpoint what's actually happening in those.
Mm-hmm.
But it happened so fast. It was hard to, and it's so disoriented as it's intended. It's very good at doing whatever the hell it was doing because it really made us ask questions.
But it's so easy to just like, because that happens and you're like, oh, what's happening? And then suddenly this next scene happens and you're like, you just forget about it. You don't have time to process or think about it, really.
Well, like, we don't even know, like, is Madeline Pryor alive right now? Did she die in that explosion?
I mean, I don't know, but like, that would be a weird use of the character to just bring her back for, anyway.
It feels like that would be a moment where it's like, you would only do that if it was part of Cable's story, where Cable finally got to meet his mom for the first time, and it was in the moment just before her death that he couldn't prevent. And maybe it's there to help motivate him to save her by going back in time again. You know, maybe there's that angle that they'll play.
Yeah, potentially.
What do you think? We briefly touched on it before, but what do you think the deal is with Cable and in this being here, serving this purpose?
Well, I mean, it's kind of the Bishop thing, right? It's like, if I go back in time, sort things out at this point, then my life's not going to be so fucked up now.
Yeah. But if he was going back in time, like, couldn't he have gone back like a couple of months before and kept himself from getting the the techno-organic virus?
Good point. But how could you stop yourself if it was the clone? You'd have to stop your mum from being created.
Well, I guess it depends. I guess maybe he doesn't really know enough, but there's a world where if he was really precise about it, he could have just like broken into Sinister's lair. And while all the craziness was happening with Madeline, he could have like taken Sinister out before he infected him with the techno-organic virus.
Yes.
That could have happened. It didn't happen. And you know why it didn't happen? Because that would be boring. Sometimes you stumble into this thing of like, well, all of the problems could have been solved if they had only done this. And it's like, yeah, but then there would be no story. Yeah. So
why didn't you do the sensible thing?
So anyway, a lot of people make a lot of bold choices after the big explosion. Not a lot of people making sensible choices. I just want you to walk me through what your reaction to all of the carnage was, all of the explosions, all of the death and destruction and high stakes drama that ends up culminating with Magneto and the kids dying, culminates with Rogue trying to sacrifice herself to kill the robot out of just pure grief and anguish, and then being stopped by Gambit so he could do it for her, and then ultimately Gambit's cum gutters saving the day by blowing up that robot single-handedly.
So because you've just brought up the cum gutters, I guess it was a bit sad that he wasn't wearing his signature crop top in this episode whilst that was happening. But otherwise,
would have been a nice like fuck you to the gala for him to wear a crop top and jeans to it. Like that would have been. That feels like that would have been on brand for him.
Good point. I think so. There's a few things I think. Right.
Yes.
I think it was quite effective that the episode up until that point gave no indication that this was happening, and it just happened, and it just like wiped you out.
Yeah.
But I wish we had more time seeing. Oh, no, maybe I don't. Maybe it was like more impactful because it was just so like, and it just happened. And then you were at, then like scene ends, episode ends.
And it comes at you like a freight train. Like it happens so, like all of it is happening so fast, but because it's all so intense and traumatic and disorienting. I honestly felt like it was a lot longer. Like I thought like, oh, they must have like, jumbo sized this episode. This must be like a 50-minute episode. And then like I looked and it was like normal running time. Like it wasn't longer at all. But by the time I finished watching it, it just felt like I had watched an hour of television because of the emotional like wallop that you get.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, it's like, where is this going? How is this happening? Wow, are they doing this? Of like the basic thoughts. I think there's always a bit of like cynicism.
Okay.
And that, maybe that's not the right word, but like, you know, when you are a comic book reader or watch TV shows of this ilk, it's always like, I'm looking out for the thing that they're telling me, but they're not showing me in order to make my mind up about whether I think it's actually happened, which is why I said before that I don't think Magneto's dead, because you didn't see Magneto dead. You saw the explosion and you saw the Sentinel saying at Omega level, mutant. Oh, what's the word? Anyway.
Omega level threat. Destroyed.
Destroyed. But Magneto was next to Leech, and Leech
not just
has
that.
Power.
So I love that as like a fan wank where it could be like Leech drew his power level down, so he's not Omega anymore. But I think you don't even need to go that far because we also
he's
know.
He's unconscious.
Well, no, not that. But when Gambit dies. Like before he dies, he's still alive, but he's been fatally wounded. And the robot says something very similar about the threat, like the threat neutralized. And then it's like, and the robot was wrong because actually the threat was still very present and caused him to blow up. So I think that that casts doubt in the like the whatever system the robot has to determine if he's really, you know, fully destroyed the mutant in the first place, because he got Gambit wrong. He was very wrong about that threat being neutralized.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, otherwise I felt Rogue's grief was very real to me. The way that Gambit stopped her was really like wow.
It was just one of those moments where it's like, he is not going to wait to try to talk her out of it. Like he's okay if she's mad at him for robbing her of that opportunity to destroy that thing, if it means keeping her safe, because he just loves her so much and he just doesn't, and he knows that she's going to die. And he's like, I'm going to die. You can't die. And I don't care. Be mad at me. It doesn't matter. I'm not letting you do this. It happens so fast and it's so intense. And it's also like, it does say something about how strong Rogue is, that in order to protect her, he throws an exploding motorcycle at her, knowing she'll be okay from that. Not a lot of characters get exploding motorcycles thrown at them to save them from getting injured.
Yeah. And I mean, as a throwback to the conversation we had earlier, these are the types of things they could be experimenting with in order to have sexual satisfaction without actually touching each other.
Exactly. This is what I'm saying. I agree completely.
But yeah, just over in a blink of an eye, and leaves you in that like kind of state at the end of the episode.
Yeah. And I think it was just so effective at ratcheting up the tension so quickly, at like escalating the level of threat and making it feel enormous and dangerous in a way that it's so hard to, because like you said, we've seen comic book stories for decades, generations at this point, right? We know all the tricks. We know, oh, somebody seems like they're dead, but we haven't seen the body, or maybe there's a clone, or maybe whatever, right? We've seen the kind of like, oh my God, this threat has never been more dangerous than ever. And then the next time there's an even more dangerous threat, and the next time, right? So it's easy to kind of be cynical and to be kind of like, well, I don't really buy into this, or like, I've seen this before. But the way they present this, I think it's just, it moves so fast and it's so emotionally intense. And you really immediately feel like, I'm watching a cartoon based off of a children's show from the 90s. It's on Disney Plus, but right now it feels like literally anybody could die. And yeah. These shows are made so that way nobody ever dies, right? It's like there's a safetiness to it. We're not watching Invincible where it's like people are getting beaten to a bloody pulp and anything can happen. This is a kid's show. Like the heroes don't die.
Yeah, and everything should be resolved at the end of the episode.
Yeah, and in this moment, nothing is resolved. All of that safety, all of that security is just completely pulled away. And it really, it feels traumatizing. It's so deeply upsetting to see. And they just lean into the emotion so hard that like any sort of like logic gaps or anything, it's just like none of that matters because you're in the moment with these characters so deeply. And it's epic in a way that is overpowering and deeply upsetting.
And can you do the closing line in Rogue's accent for me?
No.
Well, anyway, when she said that, I can't feel you. That's like, oh, yeah. That's a good closing of the scene.
Sugar, I can't feel you, sugar. I can't feel you.
Yeah. I mean, so if the voice actors for either Banshee or Moira McTaggart are listening to this, now's your chance to say that we're totally shit. although we're not getting paid for this. So, sugar, I can't feel you. At least we tried.
We did. We tried. We did our best. Devastating. So sad. Do you take it back? We're at the beginning of this season, you were like, I know it's the original voice actress, but I wish they recast the role. Rogue sucks. Do you take it back now that she has broken your heart into a million pieces?
I'm okay. Yeah, Rogue can stay.
Okay.
Wolverine? No. Let's get rid of Wolverine. I just can't get into him. I just like even that like emotionally fraught scene that we've already covered, so let's not go back to it, but with Jean was just like, oh no, I'm not buying you.
he's won me over.
Oh, okay.
Won me back, I guess I could say.
Oh, okay, well, I'll give it another few weeks, maybe I'll love him.
Yeah, I did really like that the episode, like, it ends on the right note of Rogue being just absolutely devastated and alone, fade to black. But just before that, we do get a cut to the X-Mansion with the X-Men watching what's happening, just completely powerless to do anything at all. And it's like, oh, at the beginning of the episode, we get all this like kind of like boastful stuff. People, like all these people on the island being like, this is happening because of the X-Men. We wouldn't have had this if it wasn't for the X-Men. The X-Men are our saviors. We need the X-Men. We need an X-Men who's on the council. We need Magneto to be in charge because Professor Xavier wanted him to be. Like everything is so because of the X-Men, like they're our champions. And then their champions are just sitting there on the other side of the world, powerless to stop absolute carnage. I thought that was really, that really said a lot.
Yeah. And them knowing that they knew people there, that this was supposed to be the place for their people. Like, yeah, this is a place for their people. And yeah. That must suck.
And they just, I forget who says it, but somebody just like yells out like, how many dead? Who died? How many have died? And there's like no answers. Nobody knows anything. And it's just like, it's awful. it's just going so hard at that point in a way that I just was not prepared for. And it's interesting. I read an interview, or not an interview, a statement that Bo DeMeo posted on X after the episode, which is interesting because he had shut down all of his social media accounts after being fired, but they were up again just to post this, at least, where he says that this episode is what he pitched to Disney and Marvel to get the show greenlit. Like, this was the big idea that he had that got them to do the show. His whole take on it was like easing us back into the world of the X-Men, this story that we like grew up with and then went back to during times of hardship and trauma and things like that, remembering this like nostalgic place, right? That's the idea that we have of them in our head. So we're going to present it like that at first. And then we have this moment. He compared it to September 11th and saying that like this, for him, September 11th was this incredibly traumatizing moment of like, the world is not safe. I am not safe. We are like, the kind of naivete of childhood has been shattered. And like, things are, the world is now broken, and now we have to kind of like build ourselves back out of the rubble of that. And he kind of makes the argument in the post that between that and then like the financial crisis and recession and COVID and everything like that, we're still kind of trying to dig our way out of that sense of childhood naivete that these generations that grew up with this show had. And so he wanted to give the characters that same experience and see whether in their world they can come together as after this tragedy, or if they fracture in the way that, you know, our world fractured after a similar tragedy. I thought that was so interesting as context for the show, and like wild that like that is the pitch that then was like, yeah, we should make this, we should revitalize this kids cartoon because of this story. Like, it's pretty impressive that they said yes to that.
Yeah. At first I think, wow, imagine pitching a cartoon and being like, hey, let's do 9/11, but with bright colors.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I mean, it makes sense based on what I've just seen and like that, the feeling of devastation that they've tried to evoke with it. I guess it'll be interesting to see how they attempt to rebuild this world in the subsequent episodes. But they've only got like 4 episodes, don't they? Or is it 5? 5 episodes?
Where this is okay. The halfway point. This is point. 5, yeah.
Yeah, super interesting. But also it would be interesting if, you know, because, you know, last week we spoke about it was in we were a bit puzzled that there was this episode in between Storm's arc. Be interesting if Storm's arc includes reference to this tragedy having happened.
I think that probably what we get is we get the end of Storm's arc in a very isolated way. And then she has finally like made peace with her demons and feels like a more centered person. And then she finds out what happens in Genosha, and that spurs her to come home, you know?
Yeah, that would make sense.
And I think it's also smart to, you know, we talked last week about how like, was it smart to separate these two things? And I still have of two minds about having an episode in the middle of it, but I do think that it makes sense to have constructed the season in a way where we get a whole episode next week where we're not immediately touching on the Genosha stuff again, because like we need a moment to kind of breathe and to let the dust settle a little bit before checking back in on those characters. But also like if we just like cut to Jubilee in a video game, like that would feel really not okay.
Oh yeah, that makes more sense now why that was so early in the season.
Yeah, so I like that they have like a place where we can catch our breaths, but it still feels like it's going to be a pretty emotionally intense episode, just a different type of emotionally intense episode next week. So we're not just like going like wildly from one tone to another, but we're still letting one story kind of like sit for a week. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's a very interesting way to construct the show.
So are there any things that we haven't talked about? Do you know, we didn't talk about Nightcrawler really at all.
No. And he was there and he did do things. We talked about how he like, you know, helped out Gambit to realize that Gambit really needs to get over his bullshit and just tell Rogue he loves her, which was ultimately poorly timed advice. He could have probably given that advice a week or two ago. Would have gone over a little better. And then he like heroically like sacrifices himself to protect Rogue and Magneto during that explosion. Yeah. And he seems not dead, but definitely not doing great at the end of that episode.
The only other thing is that he has like some religious leader role in Genosha. And again, that is a story that was told through the Krakoan era. So just just to make you aware. I'm not sure why.
Yeah, no, that's a good little tidbit.
Here's something to know.
Because it is like in the way that it's told, it feels just like a callback to his one episode of X-Men, the animated series, because very sad to say that he's only in that one episode. And in that episode, it's basically like he's living amongst these like monks, and then like one monk is like, oh no, you're from Satan. And then the X-Men have to, and it's ultimately like this episode where like Kurt helps Logan find faith. And it's like actually like a pretty interesting episode, given a lot of it is just about them like accidentally burning down a monastery. But you know, so it reads like a callback to that by saying like, oh, he's the interfaith like expert on the council. And then they make like a joke about the monks from that episode. But then that's cool that it's also an Easter egg to the Krakoa era where he is that.
Where he sets up his own religion, because, you know, that's how he rolls.
Sure. That's great. I'm happy
for him.
Some
might say cult. He says religion. Who was your favorite cameo in this episode?
So there's so many. I want you to first tell our audience about some of the ones that jumped out to you, and then I'll go.
Okay. So the obvious ones is Glob and Pixie, who were there with Leech, and we saw quite a few times. The Dazzler, again, you've mentioned her before, but with red hair. Yes. So like nothing like the comic books, but I know that it's cartoon accurate.
It is.
Madrox the Multiple Man, Exodus, Angel was there. Marrow was there at the Hellfire Gala. You could just see her like a little bit. And
that's
Boom
great.
Boom was there.
I'm Who most happy.
Pre-Jubilee about, kind of character.
Yes. I'm most happy about Boom Boom because I like Boom Boom a lot in the comics. And I feel like she's never really been presented ever outside of the comics. And I think she's got a lot of potential as like a new teen character for next season, maybe. So if she survived the blast, I'd love for her to get an invite to the X-Mansion and become friends with Jubilee and Bobby. They would make, I think that could be an interesting love triangle, but it could also be like the same person being in love with three different versions of themselves. And like, we already have that literally in X-Men, so we don't need it figuratively, maybe, but...
Why has everything got to be a love triangle on this show? Tell me.
Because it's a soap opera and you need to have love triangles in soap operas, Kay. Come on.
Couldn't you have a quadrangle or something?
Well, I guess that is kind of what's going on with the Madeline Pryor, you know, Jean Grey, Scott Summers, Logan, Morph. That's a pentagon of of unrequited love. But I just love that they're pulling so much stuff from the Krakoan era, because I thought we talked about this, or would that be something that they would do? And I was like, "Hey, it's great that you talked about it on the podcast, but we know for sure they're not going there. That's like way too arcane, way too complicated. They're not going to put it into this kid show." And then they are finding cool ways to do that. So fuck me, I'm wrong again.
Well, it's weird though, because it's like they're throwing everything at the wall, right? Like they're not.
Yeah.
They're not like, we'll save that one for another series. We'll save that for later on. They're just like, yes,
but
put it all
I
in.
I love that energy. I think like burn fast and burn bright, because you know what's the worst? When you're like 5.5 seasons into a TV show and you're like, well, there's like one thing that I really want to keep watching for, but the rest of it is kind of like really past its prime. You're just like, do I keep watching? Do I stop? Like, I hate that. Like, just tell the story that you're going to tell. Tell it as loudly and as boldly as you can. Burn up as much story as possible in that span of time. And then just, you know, shut down the doors and tell a new story. You know, that's where I'm at. So I'm very happy that they're taking this approach.
But they're just going to run out of story to take from. So you're just saying like to write original stories that have nothing to do with comic book continuity.
I'm saying like run as fast as you can to tell all of these comic stories in this context. And then, you know, 2 seasons, 3 seasons, it's all wrapped up. We go off, we tell a different story with somebody else.
Okay, but you do know that this show has been greenlit and is being made by Disney, who will ring it for everything it's worth. We're not sponsored by Disney, are we? I'm allowed to say
no,
this.
We're not sponsored by Disney. Much as Bill Bodkin would like it us to be, we are not.
But I mean, if the show's really successful, they're not going to be like, yeah, we agree, you've told all the stories you needed to tell.
I don't know. If you look at what Disney has done with like Dave Filoni and the Star Wars animated universe, it really seems like they trust him as a storyteller, and they know that his brand is strong enough that he can just do a new show with new characters and it will be popular and compelling and grow over the years. And so he can let shows run their course in 3 or 4 seasons and move on to another project. And that project will still be good and exciting because it's attached to a really popular brand. The fans respect the guy behind it. And so people are going to show up. So
that's not comparable to this situation then, because they fired
no, because they
the
fired
guy.
The guy. So fair enough. But I think like on it, I really think like how much can you squeeze out of an extension of an original show that went 5 seasons in the first place, right? So just like tell all the stories that you spent the last 20 years being like, man, I wish they had a chance to tell that story. That would have been cool. And just do it. And then, you know, do something new. That's where I'm at.
Mm-hmm.
But so, Kay, just before we recorded today, Disney Plus released a promo teaser for the back half of the season.
And oh, did they?
They did. And I didn't send it to you because really there's only one thing of notable, because it was a lot of like, this is what has happened so far, and like quick cuts to all things that happened in all the other episodes that we've already seen. And then it's like, you won't believe what happens next. And then it's cuts to more things that already happened in the episodes we've seen, but like characters being like, oh my gosh, but like from other episodes that we've already seen. And then the only piece of new footage is the Captain America shield falling, it like falling into the ground, like as if it has been thrown and it's gotten lodged into the ground. So they're teasing Captain America will be on the show. What is your reaction to that news?
Well, my immediate reaction is I've just watched an episode of Three Body Problem that has the Captain America shield in it. So my brain's gone that direction.
It's haunting you.
But I don't know. I don't really care about Captain America.
But it does suggest that maybe we're getting like a clash with the Avengers at some point. And there are some pretty notable X-Men stories that where they clash with the Avengers.
Yeah, and most notably, the Avengers versus the X-Men.
Yes.
The imaginatively titled.
Listen, it's very efficient. We know what we're getting. And I would have said for sure, like, that number one, no way they would do that in season one if they were doing it. And probably they wouldn't do it at all, right? But I also didn't think that they would have, like, a genocide on in the middle of the season. So maybe I'm off base on my expectations.
Yeah, and maybe they've got 3 minutes to squeeze the story into at the end of the episode.
But there are other Avengers versus X-Men moments. Like, there's the whole Onslaught is a kind of Avengers versus X-Men moment. Right. In some ways, that's why they all get sucked into a pocket dimension and get their books rebooted as a result of Onslaught.
When that happens. Yeah.
it's so inconvenient, you know. You have dinner plans and now suddenly you're in a pocket dimension and you're 25 again. It's like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
But so there's a chance that we could be headed towards Onslaught, which could bring Charles Xavier back into the mix.
I mean, that's so Onslaught is just so dumb.
But it's like, if people who don't know, it's basically like Magneto and Professor Xavier's like subconsciouses basically like merge and end up being a big bad. Right now on like campus,
you're like rolling your eyes right now, aren't you, listener?
You probably should be. It's basically just like, what if Charles Xavier was in Magneto's body and like controlled all the Sentinels and like attacked New York City? Like, that's basically the deal. It's extremely 90s though, and this is a show about 90s X-Men, so there's a chance, especially with Magneto and Professor Xavier off the board. Presumably they're not gonna be off the board forever. Could they be coming back through this story?
I'm sorry to just quickly take us off, but I just need to say that when watching this episode, I was like, how quickly did the people of Genosha build those statues of Magneto and Professor Xavier? It's a bit, they were really big. Anyway.
They were very big, but again, like, they're mutants, okay? They could do a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Have you ever tried to get planning permission for anything?
Well, they seem to not have to go through too many hoops to make Magneto.
Do they not
king
have
the
health and safety?
Queen, so.
Like, yeah, okay, all right, wait, fine.
This is mutants, we love and respect them, but they're known to just like crash through walls and ceilings instead of doors. So I feel like they're maybe not the most up on proper codes when building things.
I mean, that doing that environmental even inspection. More reason to make sure that it's a sound construction.
Or does it give you reason not to? Because you're like, this is going to get destroyed within the next few months. So like, why work so hard? We're just gonna have to rebuild this.
Okay,
and
fine.
They would have been right. So,
sorry, I took us off. Captain America, Avengers. What were we saying?
Yeah. So could we be getting into Onslaught territory? And would that be the way to bring Professor X and Magneto back onto the canvas?
I really hope not.
It's not known as a very popular crossover event. I feel like that's pretty fair to say, right? But I feel like it was it more popular in the 90s than it is in retrospect, or is it more popular now because of nostalgia? What is your read on this as an expert on X comics?
Oh, please don't call me an expert. Every time you ask me a question, I'm like, oh, do you know what? I don't remember. I don't know.
You're not an expert, EXP. You're an expert. X-P, which means you don't actually need to know
which
anything.
Which means nothing.
You're just born nothing. With your expertise as far as it can go.
I don't know. I remember, I don't know. I think as soon as anyone reads the Onslaught storyline, they're like, what? Why did I invest my time in this? So maybe there was more hype for it in the 90s before anyone actually got to the end of the story.
Yeah.
Oh, what a tumultuous time the 90s were for comics.
Truly. Much as they are tumultuous inside of this world that we are watching week to week.
Oh, yeah. Good segue.
So until we get back to next week where we're getting to see Life Death Part 2, we'll get to have the resolution of Storm and Forge and the adversary, of course. Mm. Kay, where can we find more of your stuff out there on the internet?
But before I say that, can I just point out we've spoken for 90 minutes about a half hour episode of TV?
Yeah, but that also includes all of the hours that I spent projecting onto this show, the characters.
Oh, yes. The complex world that you've provided for them. Yes. you can find me on the internet if you look for Lost Spaces Podcast anywhere, particularly on Instagram at Lost Spaces Pod and on TikTok at Lost Spaces Podcast. And if you listen to podcasts, go to your podcast app and type in Lost Spaces.
Very good. I'm going to say this every week. It's an excellent show that I really hope people listen to. And if you're like, hey, I don't like interview shows, I don't need to like meet new people on my phone, I'm fine. It's a really great catalog of different like subcultures also. It's not just like, here's my story. It is that, but it's also like, here's my story when I went to this place and this is what that place was like and this is the stuff that happened at that place. And it's really fun and interesting to learn about all of those things if you're anything like me. So I definitely recommend it.
Oh, thank you. And where do we find you, Alex?
Well, you can find me on thepopbreak.com, clicking on the podcast tab, where I supervise all of the great podcasts that we have, including an episode of Bill versus the MCU, which went up this week. Now, we were going to do one episode of Bill versus the MCU, but we had so much to talk about, could you believe it, Kay, me talk for long on a podcast, that we ended up breaking it into two separate episodes, one that came out this week and one that's going to be coming out next Tuesday. The first half of it is an update on Marvel news. So MCU news, we were going to go 30 minutes, ended up going an hour and a half because there's a lot of news to talk about. We go through every single announced project for Phase 5 and Phase 6 of the MCU and give you an update on what's going on with them. Sometimes that update is one sentence. Sometimes that update is a 15-minute conversation. It depends on what's going on with the project. So we go run through everything. And if you're wondering what's going on with Marvel, listen to that episode.
Can you give me a sneak peek? What is your most anticipated of the upcoming projects?
My most anticipated of the upcoming projects is Spider-Man 4. Which we do not know when it's going to come out or if it's going to come out, except that we're pretty sure that it's going to start filming this fall and come out next fall. And I have a little theory about how it might connect to Daredevil Born Again that we talk about at length in the episode. So I'll let you listen to find out.
And which of the upcoming projects do you think I'm most excited about?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think the Thunderbolts is what you're going to be most excited about. Okay. It's Florence Pugh. She's leading a team of reformed bad guys, and she's going to find a Superman-esque ultimate power kind of guy, and maybe she's going to turn him into an agent for the U.S. government. Maybe they're going to go rogue. Who's to say? We're going to find out.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That person was supposed to be played by Steven Yeun from The Walking Dead and Beef and Invincible. And then he had to leave due to scheduling conflicts. And so now it's going to be Lewis Pullman, who's okay. So, you know, there's that.
Oh, okay.
So I think that's one to check out. That's going to be coming out next May. And I think you're going to enjoy that one.
Okay, I'll keep my eyes peeled.
And now next week, the second half of Bill versus MCU is coming out, where we finally, at long last, talk about X-Men Dark Phoenix and the New Mutants. And that's going to give me an opportunity to tell you, to ask Kay, to ask me again for a question about the Fox X-Men films. Yeah.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate Ileana's accent?
Oh my goodness. On a scale of Magneto to Moira McTaggart, I'd say it's probably a banshee.
Oh.
Yeah.
Scathing.
Sorry to say. Yeah. Anya Taylor-Joy has been great in many things. This is not one of them, unfortunately.
But there, oh really? There is a Scottish accent in the New Mutants.
Yes, and
is it good?
There is. It's, in to my ears, very good. Okay. Maisie Williams, who plays Wolfsbane, I believe she is the best part of that movie. So, and I think that the accent is credible. You can watch and tell me, but don't watch the whole movie. Just watch a clip on YouTube.
Yeah, I'm going to go and do that now, actually. Yeah.
Okay. But yeah, so that's my Marvel stuff. You could also follow TV Break at Pop Break TV. You can follow me at Media Thinkings on Letterboxd, and you can follow me at Alex Marcus on Blue Sky. And until next time, Kay's gonna watch a clip of Maisie Williams on New Mutants.
Yes, I'm gonna go eat dinner. Something to be angry at.
We'll talk to you later.
Bye bye.